I really, really want to reverse aging, yeah, which will be possible. I see it in our portfolio companies, Cambria and Rejuvenron, like we're the two leading longevity companies literally in the world. And I think it will be possible in our lifetime. And by that, give people more time. Well, we want to do like a similar athletics competition like the Olympics, just that performance enhancements are not just allowed, they're actually endorsed. Let me give you the killer argument. It's like roundabout, by the way, it's not our numbers, that's the number of the Olympics. Roundabout 40 to 50% of athletes dope anyway.
Here we go, people. Episode 21 of Business Untitled.
Boom.
Boom. Pretty exciting episode. We got Christian Angermeyer from Germany originally. A serial entrepreneur. I met Christian right in the heart of the European financial crisis, would have been 2012, when his first one of his first hustles was going around with a very well-heeled German politician and giving economic advice. Since then, I've partnered with him in psychedelic mushrooms and longevity and crypto. In a ton of things. I didn't partner with him in his latest venture, which he's going to be very excited to talk about, which is drugs and sports. Anyway, Christian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Welcome.
I think it was 2011.
2011.
Yeah. So we both were young and tender.
So
yeah.
Mike was...
I had hair.
61.
And we could go into all the crazy stories like the Oktoberfest one, but like we leave it for later.
The Oktoberfest story is a good story. We will have to at one point.
It's a good one.
So wait. I got a question. He always joke on me, but I'm going to say it again. I technically kind of started my first business, the Nintendo business, when I was like 10, right? It was just like, you know, I put my Super Nintendo outside, charge kids. I saw that you started or had an idea for your first business at 14, which was tutoring.
Yes.
Did you start it or was the idea?
No. I did it. I started tutoring as a tutor myself, but then it was very successful because I was luckily very good at school and I always like to explain things. That's why I like to be in a podcast. I like to talk about things which excite me. And I was actually weirdly very excited about school. So I was really well in doing that. And then I was thinking though, and it sounds now super simple, but like for a 14-year-old, this was my first like sort of real entrepreneurial, thought was like, okay, how can I leverage that? Because I just can give so many lessons or hours per week.
Yeah.
And I was working hard as a 14-year-old. I was given like 10, teaching 10 hours or whatever, 10, 15 hours a week.
How big did that business get?
Well, so and then I started employing other students because I realized people want to come to me under my brand, because it made a difference.
At 14.
And I was like, okay, how do I scale myself? And then I started employing others, and I had 10 other students then working for me tutoring. So it was I made more money than my parents. Like it was like very like and I did this till I left school.
Shit! Oh, you got me beat. Sorry, he's a billionaire and I'm not.
So how do you, give us the entrepreneurial story. Did you go to college in Germany?
I went to university. So in Germany, you have colleges kind of at high school and colleges one. And then, so I went to university. So what actually had happened, so I had this tutoring business. Then I had 1 year where you have normally to go to military service. Back then, they changed it in Germany. And I didn't want to go. So you could also do like a social service. But in the social service, I didn't want to do that either because I thought like it's forced labor. It's like very like bad. You can't force people to do something.
Yeah.
So I started managing money for the doctor in the hospital.
How old were you?
Like 18. What in return fuck? For them giving me sick leave. So that was sort of my side hustle at tutoring and managing money. And then when I started, I think that in a good way ruined me is a negative word, but like that changed me because when I was really like actually set to do something more like academia, like I wanted to study, like become a professor, whatever. But then because I was working and hustling all the time, so when I then started university, I was kind of out of that learning routine. And then, but because I was really good in high school, I was sort of one of the best students in Bavaria, I had this scholarship. So I thought I had to study economics, which to become an entrepreneur, which is not the case. But I also had this scholarship for biotech. And then literally, my first tutoring session with my two biotech professors who were tutoring me, I was like, come on, leave the basics aside. Like, what is really cool? Like, what's on your mind? Like, what are you thinking of? It's going to be cool in 20 years from now? What's like, and they told me about an idea which didn't even have a name. And I always admit, like, I didn't fully understand it, but I understood the concept where they want to go. Yeah. But my was like, okay, if this works, like, you shouldn't do it at university, which is normally, especially back then, we're talking about 1999, the German mindset was like, you do it as a research project, not as a company. And I was talking them into starting a company. And then they looked at me like, you said, like, oh, have you ever done a company? I was like, surely I have. Like, I had this tutoring business. Like, I know how it works. Yeah. And then we started this company together. And then it turned out very quickly, like almost already after a year, that they really had made a sort of discovery of a lifetime. Then we went public for $1 billion, 2004.
How old are you?
Well, that was then 23. And then now it's actually a 30 billion. I haven't looked.
What was the discovery?
So they invented and commercialized what is now called RNAi technology, which is now a whole sector, but Alnylam, which is the company we started together, is sort of the key patent holder. Again, I haven't looked because I sold back then when we IPO'd, which was a wrong decision. But I think that because my two professors actually stayed on and I'm still in touch, they retired some years ago, and it's now like a 30, 35 or whatever it is at the moment.
Billion-dollar
company. All out of a tutoring session in Bayreuth.
Is this the same town that he was born in, like a town that had like 90 people or something like that?
No, it was an hour away.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I actually was very cozy at home. Like, I didn't want to go away quickly. Like, I have a great relationship to my parents, so I actually went to a university town very nearby, which is a good one, but like a small one, which was also good. Otherwise, I wouldn't have met these guys. Like, it was all very cozy.
Mm-hmm. How much people was in that town?
I think 60,000 or 40,000, something like that, yeah.
Like, growing up in a town with 90 people, you literally know everyone.
Yeah, no. I mean, this was a child. Like, yeah, that's where I grew up till I was nine. I was in this, this is not even a town, it's like a village, like with 90, 100 people. Yeah, maybe 120, yeah. And then I moved to a town which was like 3,000 people, but I still knew most of the people. It was very, my childhood was amazing. Like, and I think the reason why I'm always happy, and that's why we also came to psychedelics later, because of all these happiness thoughts, like, is like because of my upbringing. So I love my parents. I had the best childhood ever. Very basic, like very not.
When you look at that, right, you've been so entrepreneurial, started so early, had such big successes. Anything in your makeup environmentally or something that you know, kind of created that for you?
Like, zero. Like,
you
it's
don't,
the
you
opposite.
Know where it
it's
came
like
from.
If people meet my parents, you might have interacted at a party. Like, they, if I look a little bit like them, so that's good, because otherwise people. But otherwise people are really like, okay, this is very like, it's so like my whole family, it's not just my parents, there is nobody entrepreneurial in my family. There is nobody entrepreneurial in my village or my town, because that doesn't exist where I come from. So, and I was always like that.
Always
like
an oddball. The oddball.
Yeah. So also when I was like
and
six,
curious.
I really started selling stuff on the street. Like, my parents still tell the story that I practically everything I did as a child, like, you know, when you do handicraft, how it's called in English, when you do stuff for your parents, I never gave it as a present. I always sold it. I always made like, oh, that's, or when I was playing circus, I always sold the tickets. Like, everything I saw already as a child was through the lens of what could be the business out of.
You know what's crazy? That, like, Mike sold leaves when he was, what,
that's
five?
True, yeah,
knocked on doors, sold leaves. I sold fish, Nintendo. Dave, did you sell anything? Well,
I wouldn't
they
say I sold.
Rich,
I was
so.
No. I was
built real estate. Like,
was,
he was building castles.
I was curious, man. I read a lot. I looked at a lot of things.
That's so funny.
I was much more like just into what's the idea. What's the idea? Is how I.
Do you think? And that's a question, I guess, for everybody. Do you think you're like born with that, right? Because from my town too, I'm like the only person who made it to wherever I made it to today. Out of 1,000 people, right? Like. Are you born
with it? Don't badmouth Humble King.
No, I'm talking about from like my little town in Trinidad where everyone is great. Shout out to Humble King. But yeah, like, so I'm like, was I born with this? Like, you think you were just.
No, it must be like, I don't know if it's gene, but like, it must be something you're born with, because there was literally, I thought about it a lot. There is nothing, which maybe the only thing was. The Walt Disney comics, Dagobert Duck. Like, that was the only entrepreneur I knew when growing up, because, like, there was nothing.
One thing we've noticed in interviewing entrepreneurs is 95% of them, the number one trait we find is curiosity.
Yeah.
Just curious. Learning new stuff, reading books, meeting people. And one of the other ones is networking. And you probably are the best networker, or at least top three networkers I've ever met. Mm-hmm. Like, I introduced Christian to one of my friends, and 2 weeks later, he's better friends than I am. Mm-hmm. And you're curious.
Which goes hand in hand, because I'm really curious in people, because people are, I think, very fascinating. And I also think everybody is fascinating. You can even, like, I always try to talk to the taxi driver, and it's not a cliche, but, like, mm-hmm. normally one rule I have, like, obviously you can say, like, people who are very successful are more interesting, have more to say, but, like, everybody has something. Yeah, mm-hmm. you just need to find that out and sort of harness
you
that.
You know, it's funny. Yeah. That's something I actually, like, tell people all the time. I talk to everyone.
Yeah,
I
why not,
find
by the way?
Everyone like, so interesting, the taxi driver, mm-hmm. Everybody.
Yeah. We're going to have an extrovert competition. Yeah. Forget well, the drug games, Mel, the extrovert games.
Mel talks to everybody, but he actually listens.
Yeah.
Mike talks to everybody. Listens, right? I don't talk to everybody, but I listen. You know,
listen, it's kind to everybody.
Of, I listen to everybody. Yeah, yeah. You know, I listen you a do. Lot. Yeah. But it's funny, like how different we are in that.
Yeah,
it's
true.
You're extroverted. You listen too.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm also, I always say, like, sometimes I need my time alone. I think I'm an extrovert introvert. Yeah. I can be Me very too. Extrovert, but then when it's getting too much, then I need to be alone.
Yeah.
For an evening or for a day
extrovert,
or whatever.
Extrovert.
Yeah. Yeah.
This I need guy, to recharge. Yeah.
Like, Mike,
Mike,
can't be
Mike
alone.
Recharges off of people. He yeah. like if he's alone too much, he starts to drain and he's like needs to get somebody in the room.
No,
to
I can
like
be both. I can be
up.
Alone for a long actually in yeah. COVID I was weeks alone. I really enjoyed it. Like I was completely alone. I mean I was speaking to people on Zoom, but I was yeah. like, oh, this is also great. Like I really love both. Yeah. I can go
I
alone
have to
on a holiday.
Alone for a little bit. Yeah.
Like. And Christian juggles like at least 3 Zoom calls at any given time, don't you?
Yeah, but I then mean, I need to de-stress. Yeah. Yes, but I, yeah. No, I can do it, but then yeah. I need to.
You're a great
yeah.
multitasker.
So wait, were you a millionaire at 23?
Yes. Yeah.
So take us after that. So you go public with that, and then where'd you go from that? I mean, that was a huge score. How did you like get motivated for the next thing? Were you already into other things?
Well, the thing before was like one of the big decisions was actually already before because like I tried to stay at university. So officially, I was at university for 1.5 years, mm-hmm. but I kind of mentally checked
sure,
out.
College also. Dropout.
Yes, so I mentally checked that after 6 months already. But like after 1.5 years, I had to take the decision really to drop out. And the company was going fairly well already, but it wasn't public, whatever. My mm-hmm. parents were completely against it. So, but I still did it. So that was a big thing. And then I also like, meaning when we IPO'd, I was like, okay, I want to definitely stay now entrepreneurial and mm-hmm. like do both actually. So I started investing in companies and it's still the same setup we're doing now. So we're investing. Yeah. But always when we have an original idea, then we also start companies ourselves, like Atai, which we then did together. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, so, yeah, but that's my two things, like investing as a default. So when other people have great stuff, why not sort of support mm-hmm. them? Mm-hmm. But once in a while, like so I would say we're not an incubator that we have to do every month a new idea, but like enhanced games, like when the idea is not there and we have it, then sort of let's do it ourselves.
Right.
So we can go from enhanced games backwards or we can go to enhanced games. Let's jump in because it's a pretty freaking controversial and radical idea. Dave and I were both members of the U.S. Olympic team. Shout out to USOC. And, you know, they take drug testing very seriously. That said, a lot of people, you know, we had Russian athletes win medals, U.S. athletes win medals, get the medal strip because they test positive for drugs. It's a huge industry testing people. And you're going to try to disrupt that industry. So give us the pitch.
Well, we want to do like a similar athletics competition like the Olympics, just that, let's call it doping, or I like the word more performance enhancements, are not just allowed, they're actually endorsed. Yeah. So we want, they don't have to, so you can actually enter our games, which are called the enhanced games, and which will be the first time happening next year. So you can enter as a natural, so you don't need to, but like mm-hmm. we're very happy if you do. And we want to showcase actually what humans can achieve with the help of science. Mm-hmm. So that's the short version.
What are the sports? What's the reception been? Are people looking at you like you're a crazy man?
So who allows the enhanced games? Are you just like
creating it yourself? No, so first of all, people have a wrong thought about doping because doping is not illegal from a government level. Right. It's like the respective sports league has their own rules. So if you go to the Olympics and you get caught, you get disqualified. But it's not a crime. Like right. Because like by the way, all these drugs. So let me go, what is allowed? We do have actually a framework. It's not everything goes. Like, we do have two rules. The one is like, you have to do FDA-approved therapeutics drugs. Yeah. By the way, and most of them are. But what we not allow is that you cook something yourself in a chemistry lab. So, but like the range of actually performance enhancement drugs, which are legal or medically available, like with a doctor together, is enormous. And by the way, all athletes do that again. So this is why it's not illegal from a country or federal level or whatever you call it. But like, it's just like the respective sports league doesn't allow it. And the second is that it's very important. You're not allowed to show negative side effects. Because actually very interesting, and it reminds me so much, and hopefully we talk about it as well, so we now started with that, is like when I started talking about psychedelics, which is a business we have together, Atai, at the very early days, people don't remember, because like now within years, psychedelics became so accepted. You sit at dinners and people talk about it. Mm-hmm. But when I started talking about it, I remember when I went, Mike was the first person outside of my family I ever talked about it, and we can go whatever. So, but like back then, when I mentioned psychedelics, people had crazy wrong ideas. But we said, oh, they make a hole in your brain.
Right.
Or, oh, every hundredth person on LSD is never coming back, which is completely wrong. It's completely wrong. So, and then I always pulled up a chart. And by the way, whoever is watching, like, pull up the chart from David Nutt. David Nutt is a super famous neuroscientist. And on behalf of the British government, he made the biggest ever study on the risk potential of recreational drugs.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the legal ones like alcohol and the illegal ones like heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy outcome is, but it was never disputed, it's scientific, because what he did is, he said first, by the way, what is risk? People throw it into the conversation. Oh, performance enhancement or doping is risky. Oh, psychedelics are risky. What does risk mean? We use the word, we don't even. So he started with defining what risk means. Yeah. Can you die? Can you get disabled? Can you get a long-term damage? Can you have an accident? Can you get addicted and all of that? And then he made a risk score. Yeah. And then he sort of really thoroughly researched all legal and illegal drugs with the crazy outcome. And it's one of my other life mission, just that people know. I don't want to be the party pooper, but like, alcohol is the number one most risky drug before heroin, full stop. Yeah,
no
and
way,
people
really?
Take it, yeah, and think it's fine because it's sold everywhere. It's one of our biggest sort of societal mistakes to and by the way, it's not that it would say, okay, let's make alcohol illegal.
The beer drinkers in Munich where he grew up are starting
to quake. I never drank alcohol in my whole life. I don't even try because I think it's so weird. Like, but I want at least people to know how bad it is, because people take it and don't know it, and that's the bad thing.
Yeah, but here's the question I have for that, right? I don't drink neither. But the question is, like, if you take a heroin addict, give him 90 days of heroin every single day, and you take a alcoholic or just a random guy like Mike and give him alcohol for 90 days, he will be the same. That heroin addict will probably be completely different, strung out.
So I don't want to go
seen
in
this
because
growing
like
up
you
in
pick,
the neighborhoods I've
so
grew
you,
up in.
Look, I don't want to argue like between
no,
those
no, no,
two
no,
because they're both very bad.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah,
I give
yeah,
you an 100%. Example. Like, for example, in the sort of right amount scientifically, and I want to be very careful not that people say, because that's what they actually, unfortunately, the media made out of the David Nutt study, where he got really in trouble back then, to the latest, the government advisor. The headline was, famous government advisor says heroin better, or take heroin and not alcohol. Yeah, it's like, both are very shitty drugs, like, yeah, but yeah. Both are, yeah. But like, just as like, heroin in a certain amount makes you extremely addicted. So the big problem of heroin, yeah, is addiction. But in the right, there's no right amount, but in a small amount with a doctor, for example, it has no real toxicity. So when people come off heroin, which is very hard because it's the most addictive drug, yeah, they don't have any damage to their body. So heroin has then these very bad things that if you take too much, then you sort of die because it's a kind of narcotic, like an opioid. So so alcohol, if you take for 90 days a lot, you're going to have a real damage to your body. This is why I say you need to define, is the risk damage, is the risk addiction, whatever. Yeah. Both are shitty drugs. But what I wanted to say, but when he went on this, and again, I endorse everybody to Google that chart, David Nutt chart, because it's eye-opening. When you go to the very right of the chart, you find psychedelics who practically have zero risk. Yeah, the only risk is what you see a tiny bit is that you could have an accident when you do it. This is why we want to make it just medically available, and people should do it with a therapist together. Yeah, but then they practically have super low risk. But what is also, coming back to enhanced games, at the almost very right end of the risk chart are anabolic steroids and other enhancement drugs, yeah, if you take them in the right amount. So coming back to our enhanced games, the rules is you just take medically approved drug with a doctor, and you can't take too much of it. Because, like, yes, if you take 50 times as much, what people do of anabolic steroid, yeah, yes, you're going to have an enlarged heart. By the way, if you take 50 vodka shots, yeah, you're dead.
So, yeah? How do you police that?
Everybody, we police it because we put athletes first. And by the way, that's the reason why actually we got these sort of really positive reception. Most, at least athletics organizations, treat their athletes very shitty. Yeah, it's not comparable to how we treat soccer players, NFL players, NBAs. They get a lot of money, yeah, and they treat it like heroes, which they are, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the average Olympian makes $30,000 a year. It's mm-hmm. a disgrace. Yeah, so they don't really have good stuff. And mm-hmm. if they, by the way, do performance enhancement, they do it like in the dark. So what we're saying is, like, first of all, by bringing it out sort of and making it allowed, like, you can all talk about it, you can take real doctors, mm-hmm. you don't need to order it online, whatever. Second, we're gonna test everybody, not for the drugs, because we know what yeah. they're taking, yeah, but we're gonna make a complete health check before every single game, so that if somebody really abuses it in a way that they would display side effects, they would be disqualified. So we're really making a limit where we say, look, you need to do it responsibly for you, but otherwise you get kicked out of the games.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's hard to police, right, like what you're saying. But what I think is interesting about it is, and when I first heard the idea, I was a little bit skeptical, right? Because the biases are, no, we want clean humans, right? But when you really look at what's going on in the world of enhancements, be it pieces of hardware in your body, drugs, just diet. Like, there's just so many things that technology's bringing. So I kind of changed my opinion. I'm not sure where I stand on it, you know, because I understand everything you're saying. I just think it's interesting that you're really, like, coming out in the open with a lot of things people are doing anyway, in effect, yep. and many of which are very beneficial for, you know, for people, and trying to merge those two fields, in a sense.
Let me give you the killer argument. Yeah. Is like, roundabout, and by the way, it's not our numbers, that's the number of the Olympics. Roundabout 40 to 50% of athletes dope anyway.
Right.
No so way. What they're all trying is, like, either they're risking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, by the way, the Olympics don't spend, if they're really serious, they yeah. make so much money, which goes somewhere, but not to the athletes, they would yeah. just test everybody. So there must be a reason. Think about it. Why are you not testing everybody? It's not so complicated.
They test everybody. It's just they use a random assortment because it's expensive. And so they test you any given time on no notice.
Exactly. Spend more. So some people dare to, like, sort of risk it. But then there is another game. It's like you stop, like, 2 months before, 3 months before, but you still have the benefits, whatever. So I think that's all bullshit. Like, what we're saying is, hey, it's all about contextualizing. Again, you can be natural. You can go into our games.
Will you get any stars that have been stars that will come back, you know, like Michael Phelps, you know, because I guess if you're older, you probably can last longer if you're taking steroids. 100%.
But just to finish this off, like, if you are a natural, go into our games, yeah, and you come in second, you can be proud and say, I won because I'm the number one natural. Like, in the Olympics, so many athletes secretly told us, we know who's doing it and not. You know. Like,
can you give us some names?
No.
But Dave and I both wrestling.
But you said the same. Like, you know that. So, and then they come in second, and they know the number one dope, but, like, just didn't get caught. How do you make it? How you feel it? You feel shit. Like, so in our games, like, if you come in second, yeah, and you're natural, you're going to be a hero. By the way, and there will be even naturals, and they're going to be the biggest hero who come in first in our game. And then they can really say, look, I beat all the enhanced ones. Like, it's just fair and transparent.
Yeah, I think another thing about the drug testing in the Olympics is a lot of it's political. I mean, they got marijuana in there. Marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug. They're just putting it in there because it's political and it's illegal. So I think, like, even the concept of, like, revolutionizing, okay, what are we talking about here, right? Because there's a whole bunch of supplements and things like that. Yeah. And people get violated a lot of times.
Sudafed.
Yeah, for crazy stuff. And they just get banned for a year because they took Sudafed too close to the... this happens.
There's
you know?
A lot of stuff is, by the way, banned in the Olympics, which is actually sold at GNZ. Like, it's not... It's all medical stuff. Like
Jordan Oliver got banned. He got... taken out for a year because he had a prescription for Adderall. It was like at a certain period of time when he was allowed to be taking it, needed it for his age, ADHD, and boom, they random tested him. He wasn't even, and he got banned for a year.
Yeah. One of the weirdest things was they stopped Usain Bolt. I don't know if you guys know this, but they stopped Usain Bolt and that whole Jamaican like team when they were doing so well from eating something called cassava, which is like a root of a plant that we eat. And they said, natural food, they just said.
Yeah, because that's, I think it does, it increases testosterone.
Oh, it does?
I think that's a supplement.
But how can you, in a good way. It's a natural.
It's completely like arbitrary.
Remember that when we went in 2012, the heavyweight champion of the world was Uzbeki, and he was giant. He looked like He-Man, and he won the Olympic gold 3 times. And then they realized he cheated in all 3 Olympics, so they took all 3 of his golds.
How did they realize that?
They do drug tests.
Because they do the DNA testing gets better, or whatever. You know,
the drug testing
samples
gets better.
And the drug testing gets
better. So they go back because he tested guilty. They went back and tested his old samples, and they were both.
Yeah.
But to coming to your point, like what we also realized, and by the way, it's one of these startups we're doing where, like every day, literally every day, we, in a positive way, get more input from people who calling us and say, hey, we want to partner with you on that. Like, we learn or whatever. So, but one thing we didn't even have on the radar so much was that sports in general is inherently ageist. Like, sort of, if you're 30 or older than 30, like, in most sports, you're out. You're an old person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but these people love what they're doing. Like, not just in athletics. Like, we have soccer players who say, hey, we have one famous soccer player who's going to come in. And he's like, hey, I'm 36. Yeah. But I'm not like at the top of my game anymore. Mm-hmm. But now I can be at the top of my game, and I want to be a runner. Like, and we're gonna have a very big announcement coming in the next 2-3 weeks about a documentary we're doing with a very cool concept. So watch out for it. Yeah. So, and we want to give very different people the chance to so that we show their sort of story and their journey to our games, and it's gonna be contemporary athletes, so athletes who are literally right now competing. Yeah. It's going to be sort of retired ones who are coming back. Yeah. It's going to be athletes from other sports who are going to go in. It's going to be famous YouTuber who want to show that they can do it. Like, it's going to be
a lot
very
of famous
people.
A lot of famous people.
But famous, but or, like just different people who have a passion for sports.
You talked about athletes in the Olympics don't get fair treatment or in other sports. How are you ensuring that the athletes are getting like a piece of this, right? One of the contexts or criticisms of UFC, right, for instance, is that very small percentage of that goes to the athletes. I believe that's still true versus other leagues. So
like 12%.
So what's your theory or kind of
mechanism
for that?
We
want to
give a good percentage. We're just actually defining the economics. We want to give a good percentage to the athletes based on their performance. So the one is like, for example, there's this swimmer Magnussen, like who was a former, I don't know, a gold or multiple medal winner, and he's coming back. And we actually talked, he was on the TV show, and we didn't even know about it. And he was like, oh, if they give me enough prize money, so we're going to put in, I think, 1 or 1.5 million on this thing. So it's going to be prize money, but it's also going to be, we're going to help them monetizing it more. So there's a whole tech idea behind it. Like, yeah, how can you actually do more fan engagement? Like, yeah, because these people are now even more interesting, because if you're a fan of a certain athlete, you might want to know, and you're like, hey, I want to be like that guy. What are you taking? Can I sort of, so we're going to help them monetize it more, but like, we're going to also distribute more of the money we're making via prize money, via in general competition.
Mike,
money
what do you think about tokenizing that thing and putting it on the blockchain? Like yesterday.
Everything. How do you sway society, like the normal person like me who's just like, I'm not even taking this guy serious, he's cheating?
I have not met anybody who says that. I have actually met from my 13-year-old godson to like my 60-year-old whatever investor friend who said, okay, I want to watch it because it's going to be cool, and I want to see, everybody's like me actually when they're really honest, like they want to see what humans can do. It's not about cheating, it's
correction,
about,
I do want to watch it
exactly,
but
like
I am,
you want to
be like, okay,
you
want to
see what can the human body, by the way, because I also think
is one of the fears or the risks, I mentioned to someone, they're like, oh my god, this is like the ancient, you know, gladiator,
like
we're gonna throw the gladiators in there and they're gonna just kill each other, and we're gonna watch. And that thought process is the perception of young kids who say, I'm going to need to take these drugs just to compete mm-hmm. is going to be such a powerful idea that you're going to have 14-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 20-year-olds all – now, some of it's happening anyway,
yeah.
but that you're going to be endorsing it. And that I think that will be the biggest pushback.
Yeah. But we're endorsing it again responsibly. And by the way, my and I know it's a very heated topic in the U.S., but like we – and I think it's a great thing over the last 50 years. First, it was the queer movement, then the trans movement – have given autonomy back to the person. Like, yeah, we're now in a state that people can decide how they identify, who they are, whatever, which I think is great. But if we are agreeing on that, which mm-hmm. I think society is coming to terms that it's a good thing and that people should have that autonomy, how can we take away, like, how can we say, okay, but it's not okay to enhance yourself in really vital stuff like optics, muscle stuff. But also, by the way, I think it's just the beginning. So my big thought is like we're going into this golden era of human enhancement. Like, for example, there are already great drugs which make you a tiny bit smarter. And by the way, some students are doing it, modafinil, whatever. Yeah, and some are not. Is this mm-hmm. fair? Like, we should educate people. We should educate also say, look, there is also a downside. By the way, as is for alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like alcohol has literally zero. Okay, it makes it a social smoothener. Okay, that is a little bit of an upside. But I'd rather take a little bit of modafinil in the morning. I can work better, focus more. If I were,
I sing better when I'm drinking.
Okay, like, but then it's good because then you know.
What would you do with a drunken sailor? What would you do? Question let's, for you.
Yeah, go on.
What you know? I would say like we should give people the autonomy about. Please. You can't say my body, my choice on the one side, yeah, or like on the trans mood, and then say but nothing else, like. Give people then the full autonomy of their body. Okay.
So you've partnered with Peter Thiel and Balaji on this. For you guys who don't know, Balaji is a guru and a bit of a god figure in the crypto community. Very bright guy. But Peter Thiel is probably a top five, top 10, you know, venture investor influencer in the world.
Iconoclast. Iconic, right, different right. ideas.
And so was it his idea, your idea? How'd you guys get together on this? You're both libertarians.
Like, no, the idea I have to give full to the CEO, Aaron D'Souza. Yeah, so he's a long-term friend. Yeah, he came with the very raw idea, and then we developed it together. It's not my idea. Mm-hmm. All credit to Aaron. So Aaron came to me. We discussed for a year because it was very raw back then. So I could say my part was like sort of really mm-hmm. finding, making a business model which is sort of doable out of it. Yeah, and then we both convinced Peter together, and he loves these kind of ideas.
Okay. Yeah. Should we? So that's Enhanced Games, very interesting. You know, and a true entrepreneur. Talk about longevity a little bit. Do you want to talk about something else?
I would say the thing that I've seen Christian get most excited about, and maybe make the most difference in, is psychedelics.
Okay.
And so maybe we want to talk about your psychedelic journey a little bit and why it mattered and what you did and what you see the future.
And how did you even get into it, period?
And as you do, just keep in mind, like, our listeners don't know a ton about it, so break it down.
I break it down, and I actually, because I did tell the story, I think, once or twice on podcast, but not with you together, because there is a big credit to you, Mike. Yeah, so, but how it all started, it's actually, like, weirdly, because people think when they hear me talking about Enhanced Games or whatever, that I'm so, like, pro-drugs. Yeah, I'm actually not, in terms of the stupid ones. Like, I was always very against it, and the main reason is, like, I could sugarcoat it now, but the main reason was, so I always knew I'm gay, which I'm totally fine now, but, like, back then, I realized the situation. I was in this village, like, there was no other gay person. Yeah.
There's only 60 people.
But that was, in the town later, like, and I was like, if I come out now, my life will be ruined. And there is nobody I could sleep with. Yeah, so there was no upside, like, literally just downside. So I decided for back then, just to put it aside, not to deny it. I was like, look, I was fine with it actually, but I was just like, I was always very rational as well, like no upside, just downside. But then I was super worried that that when I drink alcohol, I'm gonna spill it. Mm-hmm. So this was the main reason why I couldn't, because like you get drunk and then I was like, okay, and then I'm gonna tell everybody I'm gay and then I'm gonna ruin
tissue.
Yeah, so this is why I decided when I was 14 to never touch alcohol in my whole life. And then you need a story around it. And then I was like looking into alcohol. I was like, hey, it's really shit. Like, so I told everybody the story. I'm not doing it because it's so bad, which is true. Yeah, but the real reason was another one. So this is, by the way, I deeply believe that.
You didn't want to be the gay guy that spilled the alcohol.
Yes. So by the way, this is one of my really like favorite life stories, because like I think in every bad, not bad, being gay is not bad, but like in every adversity, yeah, if you handle it right, is the seed for something super big. Because based on that decision, and then also, for example, because you need, as a child, you need a story. Like, so my story was, I don't drink alcohol, but also, like, I needed something else because I needed to tell people, why don't I have a girlfriend? Yeah, so, because it was actually kind of popular. Yeah, so I was like, it was people wondering. Like, so I was like, because I'm so busy learning. So, and that's why I actually learned a fair amount, because And that made me really good. Like, I was one of the best students. That made me the business, the tutoring business, but that also made me the scholarship, which then made me meet the professors. And then I had I started the company, Alnylam. Yeah. So all is based on an adversity. I just thought about how to handle it. So this is why I'm actually a big believer. We shouldn't kill, or we shouldn't try to remove too many adversities. We're living in a world where the young people are like, oh, all the adversities needs to be removed. And I'm like, no, they actually make you if you handle them. We should teach them more like to handle them right, or make something out of it instead of removing them. Yeah, but anyway, so I didn't drink alcohol ever. And then I didn't take any other drugs. And then when I was 18, I was like, I'm going to go on like that. Like, sort of. So I literally, till I was like, when it was this like 34, yeah, I had not tried anything. No alcohol, no marijuana, except of coffee. And I was already very worried about that. And then I had a long story, but also, again, I believe in like these, I'm also very spiritual. I believe in these things happening at the right moment. So I had a dinner in 2013. At a birthday where the birthday boy said, hey, I'm seating you next to a very famous neuroscientist because he can loosen you up and you can drink a glass of wine with me. And I hate that, because like it's the social pressure for one of the most worst things you can do to people. So I sat next to this guy and I was like, look, I don't want to drink alcohol, but like tell me about drugs. Like if you're a neuroscientist, and he actually pulled out the chart, which I just mentioned from David Nutt. And I was like, oh, I'm an investor, so it's all about risk return. Let's go through all the drugs. I want to know, why do people take heroin? Why do people take whatever, crystal meth? Why do they all do all this shit, like, which I never understood? Maybe there is something which is worth doing it. I can tell you all the bad stuff is so bad and no real upside, so don't do it. So that was my takeaway again. But at the very end of the dinner, he was like, but the only thing you really, really have to do and should do is psychedelics. And by the way, again, now people would say, oh, very normal. But back then, this was actually perceived worse than heroin. I was like, look, you're completely insane. This is a Schedule One. I don't know if people know, like, Schedule One drug means it's literally by the government rated as worse than heroin, because heroin is a Schedule Two drug. Yeah. I was like,
it's kind of crazy.
And it's so, and I told him, it's going to make a hole in my head and I'm never going to come back. And he was giving me this passionate speech that he did his PhD still with legendary Albert Hofmann, who invented LSD. And he was one of the last scientists, by the way, back then it was a career killer, now it's a career booster, who worked with psychedelics, which never ended. So science never ended. You could do research. It was just highly sort of disregarded. And I was like, you're crazy. And he was like, but it makes you happy. And I was like, but I am happy. I'm always happy. I said that before. I credit that to my parents. That's the one thing I'm literally lucky and happy about, is being always happy. So I was like, there's no upside for me. But he kept pushing it. He's still telling the story. He just wanted a little bit of money for like sort of his science project as a donation. So he started sending me all that stuff from the 50s and 60s, when some of these psychedelics were medical solutions for things like depression, anxiety, addiction. And when I read them, because I do biotech, I was like, wow, that's legit. Like these things have no real risk. Like, and they have a property which is now needed more than ever, curing depression, anxiety, addiction, any form of mental health issue. So, but I still didn't want to do it because like, I don't need it. Yeah. And then a year later, I was with my best friends, whom you know as well, Julian and Landon, big shout out, in the Caribbean. And they're like kind of hippie, and they were like, oh, we're doing mushrooms. You want to try? And Landon is very, told me also a lot about it and scientifically. And something told me, and I can't tell you why, but I really believe in that. Like something was there which told me inside of me, like, okay, try it out. So it was a very big jump from no alcohol, whatever, to doing psychedelics. And I did mushrooms, and it was hands down the single most meaningful, positive, amazing thing I've ever done in my whole life. Yeah. And then I came out of the trip and I was like, okay, holy shit, if this is doing this to me as a very happy, very healthy person, I can totally see how it can help people who need it. So, but then for 2.5 years, I was thinking, and now you come and say, I was thinking, but I have never told this story in that detail because I think it's crazy. Like, I was thinking about how to do it, but really, like, everybody I talked to in my small little, like, I actually talked to politicians in Germany and they said, are you fucking insane? like every doctor, every investor said, every business partner, you cannot do that. Like, it's going to end your career. It's like a Schedule One drug. Like, enjoy it yourself, but don't talk about it and don't never dare to touch it, like, as a business. Till end of 2016, I did I do it twice a year, very, like, therapeutically. And I did a mushroom trip, and the main message, and we can go later into it, how they work, what you feel, whatever, but the main sort of message I received on that trip was, Christian, like, you're thinking about it, and it's the right thing to bring it back, so go out from now on. I'm still doing it. We're doing it now in the podcast. I'm doing it in every single meeting because sort of the mission I got from, I believe in the spiritual side of it, so from the divine part of it, was to literally talk to every single person I meet about psychedelics. And the message was also, like, just amazing things gonna happen to you. Don't worry, like, it's not gonna be the end of your career. It's gonna be a huge boost for everything you're doing, and you're gonna do the right thing. So, and I came out of it, and one of the things for psychedelics, again, we can talk about how they work, is, like, you really believe that. You come out and you have a mission. And then I flew to New York from that trip. And then literally the first person in 2017, my very first meeting was Mike. So, and I go, I went in your old office, I go in, and before I enter, I was like, shit, like, I have this new mission now. I need to talk about psychedelics with Mike. Luckily it was Mike, so he made it easy. Yeah. So I was sitting in your office and you said, like, always, like, hey, what's up? What's new? What's cool? I was like, psychedelics. We need to talk about psychedelics. And I gave you the talk. Yeah.
He gave me the talk. And then he said, listen, if you really want, you can come down with me and a bunch of my friends in April to this island. And I was like, are they all gay? And he's like, yeah, they're all gay. And I was thinking to myself, me, 5 gay, good-looking gay guys.
Good-looking gay guys.
Doing psychedelics. I'm gonna pass.
Next morning, yeah, you called me.
The next morning. My sister had met a guy named George Goldsmith in my sister's paralyzed in Bali, and he was pitching this idea, psychedelics to cure depression and different types of depression, and she, for whatever reason, because I hadn't talked about psychedelics literally since college, said, yeah, my brother Mike would like you. And so he was in New York. He came to see me literally 24 hours after Christian, and he gave me this whole
coincidence
pitch.
It's so crazy.
And I was like, I tell you what, I'll invest as long as my friend Christian invests. Christian, he's more excited about this. He'll do the due diligence, and if he's in, I'm in. Mm-hmm. And Christian met him. Me, Christian, and Peter Thiel put in, I don't know, a million pounds each. And Compass Pathways, the first commercial psychedelic business, was formed. Mm-hmm. At one point, it's still a NASDAQ company. At one point, it was worth billions. It's coming back. But it was a great journey. And, you know, we donated to the put money in this thing. And then Christian, to be fair, he did almost 90% of the work. I gave the story a few times, but Christian really did the diligence and started helping him raise the money and building the company. And I started getting calls from, like, MAPS and USONA, these psychedelic nonprofits, like, dude, what are you doing? And I was like, I didn't even know you guys existed. Yeah. And what I realized was Christian and George, little help from me, very small, we raised more money to put into psychedelics in 6 months than the nonprofit community had in 20 years. And it really, give him credit where credit's due, and George Goldsmith, really started this commercialization of this whole field.
Yeah,
a lot of help from other people, but that was the origin story.
Can we talk about the business model of Atai, Compass Atai?
Yeah, just, so what
happened? How does it work? What are you trying to do with it?
Yeah. No, but I just want to, like, say again, like, I think it's a weird coincidence. If I hadn't had the trip, talked to you exactly the day before, life goes in an interesting way. So we started then Compass. The founder is George and Katya, by the way. We should not forget his wife. And then I quickly realized there are more very interesting psychedelics. So the most famous one is, colloquially said, magic mushroom, psilocybin, which is Compass is doing. As when we seed funded Compass, but then I was like, oh wow, there are more psychedelics which deserve both attention, but also research. And by the way, I want to say it's super important what we're doing, both with Compass and coming to a tie in a second, is we want to make those psychedelic substances medically used again. So we're not, it's not cannabis, it's not going to be legalized. It should not be legalized because I believe they're very, very strong, potent therapeutics. But like in all the times, except of the 60s, some hippies don't like what I say, but like the 60s were an anomaly, which actually led to also like the political class back then abused it.
Right.
Yeah. But like also the way the 60s used psychedelics was not good because like it led to this backslash. If you go back the last 10,000 years, yeah, all cultures, all religions, most of them, most religions are based on psychedelics. They made it very regulated and you just were allowed to access this with a shaman together. Shaman of today is a therapist. So we want to make it super important, clearly medical.
Can you talk about legal versus not legal, though? Because that's not necessarily
clear,
right?
Because like,
legal marijuana is legal in certain states, but you're talking about federally legal, right?
People think about legal often then that it's consumer legal, that like you can go into a shop and buy it. So when I'm talking about legal, then I mean, that's why I'm just emphasizing that medically legal, meaning it's not going to be sold anywhere. It's not even psychedelics as a prescription, but you have to go to your therapist. By the way, also do therapy because psychedelics is not a standalone thing. Like we believe it has to be coupled with therapy together. But then as part of the therapy, you're going to do like a trip, so to say, with your therapist, but while you're with the therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is, by the way, a class of drugs we know, like for example, chemotherapy, like you go there and do it while you're in the hospital. So there is actually there's a blueprint for that for drugs. So Compass is doing psilocybin. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I want to do also all the other psychedelics. And this is when we started then together Atai.
Mm-hmm.
So we took our Compass stake and put it into Atai. Mm-hmm. So Atai practically is still the largest shareholder of Compass now.
Right.
Yeah. But Atai sort of became the mothership and is doing literally all other psychedelics which have a medical use case, which the big five, it's a little bit like I call them, is psilocybin via Compass. Then it's DMT, which is the ingredient in what is colloquially called ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's 5-MeO DMT. Then we're doing a newer, actually improved version of MDMA, which also has, which some people count, in this case I do, as a psychedelic. It's sort of something like-ish. It's not a real psychedelic. And then it's one of my favorites because it's favorites in terms of what it does, because it's solving hopefully soon a problem which is so big, is ibogaine, which is the strongest psychedelic, but it's also the one which has the biggest anti-addictive property. So all psychedelics are non-addictive, so you cannot get addicted to psychedelics, but even more, all psychedelics have an anti-addictive property, so they help people coming off addiction. But for the strongest addiction, which is heroin and opioids, you need the strongest psychedelic, which is ibogaine. But ibogaine, in early studies and a lot of anecdotal evidence, because there are ibogaine clinics in Mexico and other parts where it's not neither legal nor illegal, like the whole South America is practically not classifying psychedelics, shows that with high double-digit success rate, you can get people with one ibogaine trip off opioids and heroin, which is like fan group. So, which is a huge thing, obviously, because the problem is so big.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note, like, you know, the legality of marijuana around states, but not federal and recreational. And this is something very different. You're going for FDA approval, right? Studies, medically used, and it's a big undertaking.
And by the way, I'm very proud of that because I think one of the reasons, and again, there is many other people who, for example, big shout out to Michael Pollan, whoever wants to learn more about psychedelics, there's this amazing book, How to Change Your Mind.
Mm-hmm.
There are great people, like we're partnering now with her, Amanda Fielding. So she's the godmother, so to say, of psychedelics in the UK. And we just partnered with her on 5-MeO DMT. Yeah, so I want to really make sure, like, we're not the first ones, but we were the ones who, I would say, realized, and sometimes I think also things need to happen at the right time, but also we realized the power sort of capitalism, because like the only way to, in my point of view, bring back psychedelics, and also the right way, is to once and for all debunk all the urban legends which have been built up by the Nixon government and the following ones. But you need money for that, and in total Atai and Compass together, we almost raised $1 billion. Again, this is a thousand times or whatever more, like, yeah, than or 100 times more than any nonprofit could have raised, yeah, and are investing that into very thorough research, because you have to give America one thing, like the gold standard. And that's the same I said for enhanced games. Like, it's not that I have a laissez-faire attitude and say, cook your stuff, whatever. Like, it's like FDA is the gold standard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you're done with, once you're through FDA approvals, we know things work, because that's the way, and we know the side effects, if any. Yeah. So, and that's what we're doing with all the psychedelics. And that's my general view. Make all that stuff medically. Yeah. Don't do it, by the way, don't do it just like, again, psychedelics, don't do it at home alone, like, do it for therapists. But I want to give people access in a medical framework.
Yeah. Want to move to longevity? Or what do you want to
talk
about?
One last question on psychedelics. So Compass Pathways goes public, Atai goes public. Because psychedelics kind of burst onto the scene, you know, I always say all bubbles happen over things that are so real people can all understand them. And it spread everywhere, and so we had this frenzy of buying, right? The companies were worth, I mean, our stakes were worth a whole lot.
Yeah.
And then they kind of crashed down, because these are long processes. And so we had, you know, these stocks go way up and way down, and you realize getting drugs approved is really hard and takes a long time and is really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally these big drug companies fund these things because they know they're going to have patents on the other side. They know exactly how, if they have a obesity drug or an antidepressant drug, it moves through the system.
Yeah.
This is a whole new class of drugs. Will insurance pay for it? Are they going to pay for the therapist? And so there's been a lot less drug company interest. And so these companies like Compass Atai, and there's plenty others now, have been raising the money and getting these studies done. Where do you think we are in that cycle, right? We've bounced a little bit on all these stocks. The optimism, I'm more certain today than I was yesterday, last year, 2 years ago, and 5 years ago, that psychedelics will fundamentally change the way mental health is delivered.
Mm-hmm.
But as investments, where are we?
Well, so first of all, I want to be a little bit cocky. There is practically just Compass and Atai, because most of the rest is bullshit. Like, a lot of people, that was part of the... Unfortunately, then sort of then why stocks went down, because so many companies jumped on that, because you have to have IP and patents. And what we did, by the way, not just because we're so smart, I think we're smart, but we also we just were the first ones. So we had a blank field. Like, with Compass and Atai, we recreated and IP and patents around these psychedelics, because otherwise you can't invest hundreds of millions of dollars if you don't own these substances. So by logic, by the way, there can't be just a few of them. And I would say we, because we were early, I think we did a thorough job, like, we mapped out more or less everything reasonably. Is there a niche we forgot and somebody else is maybe doing? And there is maps for MDMA.
But so where are we? Yeah.
So, but where are we? Like, I think it was very, all what you said is correct, but it was also like biotech as a sector went down a lot. Like, it's not just Atai, it's not just Compass, like, the whole sector went down. And when a sector goes down, like, in the boom, because before there was the boom, like, the novelty is a bonus. So Atai and Compass did really well because there was this hype around them in an anyway good biotech market. But now when the whole biotech market went down, people were like, oh, novelty is actually bad. Yeah, and there are questions, which I think are completely answered, by the way. Like, yeah, is like, for example, will insurers pay them? Yes, we're talking to them. Like, we're like, so, but people like don't like novelty in times like biotech is turning, and you see that Atai is going up. So I think in a better environment, Atai and Compass, by the way, because they're beaten down so much, and yes, I'm talking my own book, I'm still the largest shareholder, yeah, but like, they are crazily undervalued, because we're solving and really solving one, if not the biggest problem of our time in healthcare, which is mental health. Like, it's the number one issue out there. One out of five people has a diagnosed mental health issue. Yeah, I think the sort of shadow number, or how we call it, gray number in English, is way higher, because unfortunately, mental health is still a stigmatized topic. People are not coming forward. So I think the, let's say 25%, and then comes my point of enhancement, actually, because that is what also, when we come to longevity, is like, who defines actually where depression starts? My favorite thing at a dinner is to ask people, if it's a really close friend, who has had a problem with depression, whatever. And some people say, I did, yeah. So, but then if you turn the question around and say, but who is truly deeply happy? Most of them say, no, I'm not. Like, sort of, so what I'm saying is, like, we have all the people who have a diagnosed issue, which is bad enough that this is the biggest problem in healthcare. But, like, who doesn't want to add a little bit of happiness?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, you always can. Like, I was a very happy person already, and psychedelics gave me so much.
Mel wants to know how he's going to live forever.
Yeah, let's get on,
I think psychedelics are the true thing which, at the very end, almost every person will take, because it makes you a better human being, it makes you happier, and I think at the end, happiness is all what we're here for.
Right. Anything else on psychedelics? No,
nope.
Kidding.
But I could go on forever, because it's my favorite topic.
And it's a great topic. It's amazing what you've done in it, but the longevity stuff's really cool too, right? Everybody thinks about that as you age, you know, like, live forever, or at least just live a healthy, fruitful, you know,
longer health span.
Yeah, longer health span within that. And I think, like, just in terms of addressing, like, what does it mean about longevity? Is it meaning we're living to, like, 500 years old? Is it really that we're living a more healthy to 100 or 120? What are the goals around that? And where do you see that industry going? And what have you done that's interesting there?
So first of all, the definition, because, like, sort of, that for me almost came sort of hand in hand. Like, when I was thinking about mental health and psychedelics very early on. By the way, I also always admit, like, most of the stuff we're doing is actually things which personally excite me, because I'm curious and which have an effect on me, like, in a good way. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know, like I told before and I say it here, like, I'm going through this enhanced thing myself. Like, I'm trying out all these performance enhancements for
Christian
sport.
Christian looks about four times stronger than he did last
and
time.
And wait for the next 2 months.
You can probably take Mike right now. Hmm? I think you could take Mike.
So see me, let's see in 2 months from now and see me in summer, like, my belly.
You're trying it on yourself right now.
So I'm going through the program of an Olympic athlete who would enhance themselves since 6 weeks now. But
you
it's
feel the difference?
Yes, it's amazing. Unbelievable. And it's just 6 weeks. I'm like, and you stack it up. So you practically build your stack. And
have,
like,
you studied anybody that did it for a year?
No, so by the way, there are some, because the luck is, like, because of Enhanced Games, we work with the best performance enhancement doctors in the world, who are there, by the way, because, like, 50% of these guys, and by the way, in boxing, it's 80%, like, yeah, in the NFL, whatever, like, these people all have the best sports doctors, and they're not just fixing their knees, yeah? So these are just, weirdly, most of them are endocrinologists. Like, it's like, so this is one of them. By the way, for example, anabolic steroids are around since the 50s, and they have really healthy properties. Like, again, all the stories, it reminds me so much of psychedelics, of, like, oh, your balls get small. And all of that is a mixture of urban legends. Or
well,
if people take 50
actually
times.
That's true. But we won't talk about that.
I haven't noticed it, luckily. I'm watching, like, no, all people take 50 times as much. Yeah, but these are medical drugs which are used to actually, to enhance people, like, or to treat real illnesses. So
are we on longevity though?
They are good parts of, like, testosterone replacement therapy. Yeah, is one of the most proven things for longevity. But what I want to say, so longevity, what is longevity for me? For me, aging is a disease. I always, like, since I'm 20, I was like, I don't want to age. Something is wrong. Yeah, and we need to find out what. Yeah, and I'm super proud that, because for a lot, so when I was in my early career, like, people thought, there were just a very few people, like, big shout out to David Sinclair, who's on it since a long time, but a lot of us in biotech thought, and were looking for that there is a magic switch, which sort of, we just need to find and switch off, and then we wouldn't age. So that is wrong. Mm-hmm. And there is a guy, studies online, Professor Manuel Serrano, who in the early 2010s, and now he's actually a colleague, so I started a company with him, he wrote a big paper where he said for the very first time, what is actually aging? Yeah, and the same with risks, by the way. It's always good to start with, let's define it. And he came up and said, aging is not a single disease. That's why we all got it wrong before. But aging is actually a convolute, like is several issues. He called it back then the 9 hallmarks of aging. And then he added some later on, now it's 12, some say 14, so-called hallmarks of aging, which are suddenly very provable, tangible diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they together form what their outcome, what we call aging. You get gray hair, So, but that was really groundbreaking, because, like, suddenly people were like me, like, well, we're in biotech, oh, wait a moment, these 12 hallmarks of aging, they are treatable. These are understandable problems, not a lofty aging name.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was actually when real, because I want to say, like, because, like, some people use longevity for a spa, oh, and I do an ice bath, whatever, super healthy, yeah, but that's not going to make you live to some 100 years. So I really, really want to reverse aging, yeah, which will be possible, and I think it will be possible in our lifetime, and by that, give people more time. And we don't see a reason. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be wake up and we say, hey, we're going to live not till 200, but we're going to push life expectancy gradually. And I believe if we don't die the next 10 to 20 years, because that's the time where I see, and by the way, see means it's not that I'm hoping that. I see it in our portfolio companies, Cambria and Rejuvenon, like who are the two leading longevity companies literally in the world, like what we're doing. But it's early stage. It's not like psychedelics where we could fast track it because we were based on the success of the 60s. So with longevity, it's really novel drug development, which unfortunately takes very long. So, but I think if you don't die, my message is always, if you don't die the next 20 years, it's the most stupid time to die. Yeah, because then we're going to gradually, it's also not that we're going to jump to 200, but we're going to gradually add more time. And somewhere in the next 20 years, we're going to have this magic year where we lose one calendar year, but we win more than 1 year of added on life expectancy by science. Yeah. And then it can go on forever. And I believe, or in our lifetime, we're going to go on, we're going to have the opportunity to live that long that we want to die. I think as long as we stay human, which is another discussion, because like if we start like adding things to our bodies, our brains especially, then I think we might change how we view very essential things. But in our, I think, current form or in our current thinking, somewhere you want to die. Yeah. But I want that people can live that long that they decide when it's enough.
Yeah. How, if somebody's listening and they're interested in that space, like how do you play longevity? How do you get involved with it?
And
how
do
you both. What do you do for yourself and how do you invest?
Yeah.
So
and to add to that, one of the 12 things or 14, how do you get rid of gray hair quick? Is there like a solution?
Color it.
Shave your head.
So, no, like that actually is one of the interesting things. We haven't fully figured it out. Like actually a little bit of human growth hormone for some people is actually bringing the hair color also back. So that's one of the side effects. But so I would say, first of all, like, again, there is nothing you can do now to live till 200, but there is many things which you can do right now to be still alive when the real stuff is coming. That's sort of so there's practically the biotech longevity we are doing, and then there is the consumer longevity right now. So but I could tell you now about supplements, whatever, the big five are actually hard and easy at the same time. Number one is sleep. If you don't sleep properly, it's the only thing we know which is literally rejuvenating us, and most people treat it like shit. Yeah, so you need to sleep enough. I never wake up with an alarm clock. That's my big luxury. I don't do meetings in the morning because I want to finish my sleep cycle and wake up whenever my body feels it should wake up.
What if you just like me, just have a hard time falling asleep? It's like impossible for me to sleep. I get like 5 hours sleep a day.
Well, so then, but first of all, because like there is, it's not that we all need the same amount, but like the amount you need is genetic. So the question is, do you feel okay? Because sometimes, then maybe you just need 5 hours. I just want to say, don't obsess over it. Most people need between 6 and 8 hours. Yeah. So everything less is really little. Yeah, but you might be.
You have a sleeping pill for me?
Well, so try melatonin. Yeah, people are magnesium deficient, which is a big sleep aid.
Try magnesium.
Magnesium, and then you should do something for mental, your mental health. But it could be that your mind is racing too much.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Then you could take beta blockers because they stop the sort of telling your mind to your heart beat too fast. So that's, for example, what I do sometimes. Like if I'm like, oh my God, like life is awesome and I need to do one more project in the night. Yeah, then the beta blockers.
Is that a prescription?
It's a prescription drug, but it breaks that sort of mind-heart connection. Yeah, and for a lot of people, it's more of the unknown thing, like in sleep, like if your heart doesn't come to full rest, that's either you can't fall asleep or you don't feel rested in the morning. So, but sleep is number one.
Sleep is one.
Yep. So, and by the way, read, like, because we don't have time, like, go, there's this great book from Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep. It's the best book to read about that. Okay. Second one, we had it, but I want to say it again, is happiness. Yeah, so people underestimate and happiness and social connections, because they truly make us happy. So you have to have friends, you have to have family, you have to cherish it. And it sounds super cheesy, but it's equally important as sleep, and it's maybe sleep and happiness and social connections are the two real longevity solutions we have. The third one is a proper good diet. I'm not like, oh, don't do anything completely, not like, but I like do a Mediterranean diet. That mm-hmm. seems to be the best one. Like low
yeah, in, you're on a Mediterranean.
Yeah, low in red time, meat. Like. I try to eat no red meat. I eat, if I eat it once a month, I'm fine. Like, yeah. So, but I'm not obsessing over it. But like, I eat more fish and white meat than red mm-hmm. meat. I eat a lot of vegetables. I don't eat sugar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of that. Mm-hmm. The fourth one is exercise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 3-4 times a week. You need both, by the way, muscle exercise and cardio, especially HIIT training. So get your heart rate up. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth one is, I already said it, and again, no drugs, the bad ones. So, and especially no alcohol and no tobacco. Oh. Yeah, but alcohol is the worst. I can't take people serious, by the way, who take alcohol and then they're asking me for
how
all the supplements.
How do you take this guy serious?
Yeah, like, no, at least not for the supplements.
What would you do with a drunken sailor? What do you do with a drunken sailor?
If you take one thing away in this podcast, stop drinking alcohol. Yeah.
I'm going to cut you off because I got to say something crazy. So we've been going 1 hour and 5 minutes. Christian has talked about 3 of his companies that he's been integral in forming. He partly runs. He's got teams that run them. That's 3 of 10?
Well, 10 core ones. We have 150 portfolio companies in the funds, but like I'm not involved in all of them. I think I'm involved. I'm really involved in 10 companies very closely as chairman, founder. The one we 10. Should talk about 5 minutes yeah. because it's the last one. It all goes in terms of these enhancements because where I'm super proud and I love Elon Musk, but he takes a little bit away the credit is like, we have the number one brain computer interface company in the world. Very factually, because like we have people with chips in their brains since more than 7 years. He's just starting to put it in people. We have 40 or 45 people who have a chip in their brain. And by the way,
that I would do.
I am a robot.
Well, so at the moment, because I think that's part of the future of living very long and forever. Uh-huh. Yeah, at the moment. And by the way, then we're all going to be agreed that it's great. We're using it for heavy disabled people. Yeah, either people who are quadriplegic and can't move at all,
yeah.
or people who have ALS in the end phase. And ALS is the one where you get frozen in your body. Let's start with ALS. We have an ALS patient who, so ALS, you lose your muscle functionality till at the very end, you can't even blink anymore. That's normally when ALS people are allowed to kill themselves. Because you literally, your normal mind, so you're not disabled in your brain, your normal mind completely frozen in a body. And these people are 40 years old, so they would lie there with a completely sane mind, but cannot communicate at all. You can't even blink. Yeah. So we gave one patient who was about to lose the blinking ability, and that's normally when you would kill yourself. And he had, in this case, extremely moral problems because of his religion to kill himself. We gave him a chip and he's thinking and the computer is speaking for him.
That's amazing.
So this is telepathy, by the way.
Yeah.
So, and we are also working on a hearing implant, which will send sort of sound information directly to your brain. If we couple that and we're maybe 5 years away from that, not 20, then we can send thoughts from one brain directly to the other. Yeah, that's where we are already today. That's not what we want to do. That's what we're doing.
So I got to.
I don't want to know what's in Mike's brain.
Well, that's a whole different question.
So,
for
the entrepreneurs, right? Because we spoke for a long time. Well, you spoke for a long time, which was great. But it sounds like your entire life from 14 was like this. Millionaire, billionaire. You had to fail a bunch of fucking times.
Oh, there was a lot of failures.
So like, can we talk about the failures?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the ones that you was certain was going to work out. And have you failed more time than you succeeded?
No, then I wouldn't sit here.
Two or three big successes.
Net, you have to succeed more than you fail. But first of all,
Not necessarily.
No, but venture is a failure business as well. So and what we're doing is really venture, and it's like partly super early stage venture. Yeah, so I think we're doing really good because like, but also because I really like, I love these companies. And I think and the last 2 years, by the way, were extremely exhausting because what happened the last 2 years is that a lot of companies were just running out of money and had to raise, which is normal in venture, but then the time wasn't just there. Yeah. And I know that there are some investors who say, look, that's what it is. Like, let them die. Yeah. I can't. I'm really like the worst which is happening to me is when one of our portfolio companies, even small ones where I'm not a lot involved, when they die, and I believe that they had something which is worth doing, it really makes me physically sick. So the last 2 years, yeah, and you know that, like I threw myself into that. I was trying to save
CPR.
Yeah, company exactly. CPR. Because, but I think they deserve it because they're all doing great stuff. And I think, knock on wood, yeah, and I also think we're getting out of sort of that sort of winter in venture tech and biotech. Yeah, we brought actually a lot of portfolio companies sort of through that cycle. But
what
yes,
about
but
your personal like biggest failure? Because, and I'm asking this because like, one, I want to know, and I always want people to know, like I always say my success is like me failing 90 times and succeeding 10, right? I think you said you succeeded 90 times, failed 10.
No, I don't, so. I don't know the quote. I think like, if I think about it, but I don't want to sugarcoat it because every time it's like the same when a relationship breaks up, you feel like it's pain. But like, if I look back, and I always know, I say that easy when I'm in a good mood and then, I try to remember myself when these bad things happening. But like when I look back, the biggest failures, I can give you one, actually maybe my biggest example, like they turned out to be the seed for something better. I deeply believe that. That's my religious or my spiritual view on life. I actually believe that there is no negativity in the world. I know people will do that, but like, I believe there is neither bad like or evil like nor negativity. I just think it's all about how we handle it. And like you have to look for the good stuff, even in the very bad one. Like I could like look, I could have said, oh, it's shit, I'm gay, like da da da, and like could have broken over that, or could have said, oh, I need to tell it everybody, and then people would have hated me because back
or
then
you
they
spilled
did.
The drink.
Yeah, all right. So no, but like things could have gone really wrong, like and you how you handle it. And my biggest failure, but then and I because I want to say it really in a good way, because I really love them, like I had a partnership with four when we met still, like I sort of because I always wanted brothers and sisters, I'm an only child. So when I got successful with Alnylam, yeah, I met in parallel. So Alnylam did myself, but like I met over the time, I met four other guys. Yeah, and sort of I felt that we should be a team, like sort of, and we had this holding together and we owned it equally. And for the at the beginning, I think we really like were working great together. Yeah. But I had in my head, and I was telling that story to myself and to the world, it's like, we're partners forever. Like I always said, it's like an early open sex. Like you're like partners forever. You do that together. And then over time, I would say neutrally, I don't want to say that, oh, I perform better, because that's not even a point. The point was like we developed in a different path. Like, yeah. And then what
any of them was really terrible that you realized a couple years later or whatever?
Say again?
Was any of the partners really bad?
No, they're great saying. Guys. We're still friends. But like,
but none of them is a guy named Frank.
No. So we, no, but like, so, but like we develop in different, they got children. Like I was this like guy relentless. Like it just was, we were developing in different pathways, but I tried to make it work. So for like 3-4 years, it was really not a good thing. And like, also, like the performance of our investments was actually this, like we talk about like 2008 to 2012, yeah. Was really suffering because we weren't not really fit. But I was avoiding to admit that to myself that this doesn't work anymore. It's like a divorce. So I was pushing it, and then it somewhere exploded. Luckily, in a good way, It was not a good, like, but like it was still sort of early enough that we got the, how you say, we got the turn, because I was telling Sidney, I was like, I don't want to, I don't know, suing each other or whatever. Like we were friends for like a long time. Let's make that decent. Let's make it like a good divorce. But it felt for me for 2 years, by the way, it was a real big bummer. We had to split up assets, like, and it was in the worst time. It was in the Euro crisis, whatever. So it was really like business-wise, it was 2012. It was my worst time. And I felt like defeated because like, I also had this story I told people, like we're gonna stay together. And like people said, oh, this is a complete failure, which it kind of wasn't because we just made a split. But then 3 to 5 years later, I was like, okay, it was the right thing, the best thing, which actually happened to me, to be on my own and to build like this business I'm building now, my holding on my own.
In each of these podcasts where we've had a guest, we got a little special performance. Dave has been literally given an ounce of gold to every single person for their ounce of gold. And Mel and I finally felt guilty. We're like, dude, this guy's, he's going to run out of money. And because gold is about $2,000 an ounce, it's on its way to $3,000 an ounce. We got a call from JM Bullion, our first sponsor. 21 episodes, Business Untitled's got a sponsor.
Shout out.
And now JM Bullion, the largest direct-to-consumer gold sales company, they are a subsidiary of a Fortune 500 company. A-Mark Precious Metals, they're providing us with gold. And they said if we do a good job, one of these days we're going to have our faces on the gold. Right now we got a gold buffalo.
And I'll tell Kristen, every podcast at the end we ask our guests, you've said some amazing things about networking, about psychedelics, about longevity, about your enhanced games, but we always ask for you to leave us with your final words of wisdom, which we call our ounce of gold. For our listeners, we give you an awesome ounce of gold. Amazing. As part of that.
It's Jay and Bullion right there, first sponsor.
That you can keep, and just tell us, you know, kind of final parting words of wisdom to our listeners.
Entrepreneurs.
Well, what I said, I do think in like, you always have to look for the opportunity in adversity. And I think nothing can be that bad that you can't find the silver lining in it. My spiritual belief is there might be things, like obviously if your parents pass away, whatever, which where's the silver lining there? But I think we're gonna see that lesson learned when we enter, when we exit this life and go in the next one. Then you're gonna have the bigger view, and then you're like, oh, then you will have the same what I have on a small level now about the breakup with my partners back then. You're gonna have about very bad, what we call bad things, I think we're gonna realize once we exit this life and like we have a bigger view, we're like, oh, this is what I was supposed to learn. And I did learn it, but in the moment it felt really shit. But I deeply believe everything which is happening to us, practically and spiritually, is good for us because at the very end, I also believe in God, like God is just like good.
Guys,
beautiful.
Let's give Christian a big shout out.
Thank you,
infectious
Christian.
Energy. You can tell why he has 10 companies. He doesn't stop. He's curious. He loves life. He loves people. Let's also give one more shout out to our sponsor, JM Bullion. We're going to put their website on our podcast somehow, because I think it's pretty cool that they called up and they wanted to sponsor us.
It's amazing.
We talk gold, so dope. And they love gold.
And Christian, I don't think anybody told you this podcast was created. Let me give you a little backstory. It was created by two rich guys, one Jewish, one white, one upcoming black guy. And the goal behind this is for every rich guest to write the black guy a $1 million check.
So for which endeavor?
Here is your chance to write me. And I just take 1 million. If you want to give two, that's fine. But the goal is to get me to $100 million. We're on our way.
I'm going to give you one Bitcoin because it's going to be worth $1 million very soon.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm waiting on that Bitcoin.
All right, Christian.
All right, guys. Christian, thank you.
Yeah, really. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.